Kia koutou katoa. Before we begin, I'll take the usual practice of handing over to Dr. Bloomfield first to give us all an update on today's numbers.
Thank you, Prime Minister. Tena koutou katoa. Today we have no new cases of COVID-19 to report. In addition, one case that was previously categorised as a probable case has been changed and is now defined as not a case. So our overall total of confirmed and probable cases decreases by one to 1,486. Our total number of confirmed cases therefore remains at 1,137, and we will continue to report this number to the World Health Organization as we do update them each day. Yesterday there were 3,232 tests processed at our laboratories around the country, and the combined total to date is 155,928 tests. Of our cases, 1,302 are reported as recovered, which represents a total of 88% of our confirmed and probable cases. Today there are four people in hospital and none of these is in ICU. There are no additional deaths to report. We still have these 16 significant clusters around New Zealand, with three now closed, as I've previously reported. One existing cluster, this is the St Margaret's Hospital and Rest Home, has today had five new cases linked to it. It's important to note these are not new cases. Rather, what has happened is, following further investigation, cases from what was previously considered a separate, smaller cluster have been linked to the St Margaret's cluster and those have been merged. These are existing cases and none of them are patients at Waitakere Hospital. Obviously, having zero new cases of COVID-19 to report for a second day in a row is very encouraging, and all New Zealanders should feel pleased with their efforts. I certainly do. And of what we have achieved together over these last weeks. Of course, we must stick to the plan. The worst thing we could do now is celebrate success early before the full-time whistle blows and jeopardise the gains we have made. Stay the course, stay in your bubble, and don't squander what we have achieved to give this by giving the virus a chance that it will only too readily accept if we do that. I just want to talk a bit about exemptions. We require anyone entering the country, as you know, to go into a 14-day period of either quarantine or managed isolation, the former if they are symptomatic. To date, since 28th of March, around 6,000 returned travellers to New Zealand have gone into managed isolation or quarantine, and there are currently 179 people in quarantine facilities, and just under 2,800 people in managed isolation. These precautions are obviously to prevent the virus coming into our country and to ensure that all New Zealanders are protected. There is, of course, a process for requesting an exemption, including on compassionate grounds, and the Ministry has to date received 24 such requests that relate to a dying relative. As you know, there has been a judicial request of judicial review of one of those requests, which last Friday resulted in the court intervening and a personal visit was organised. As a result of that judicial review, I've asked our team to review previous similar requests to ensure that they followed the correct process and take into account the judge's findings. I should also point out that it won't be the same team doing that review of those cases, but they are being done by a separate team that is in the National Crisis Management Centre, which considers all those requests for exemption for domestic travel. So they are being done by an entirely separate group of people. The review started today. I have asked for it to be completed as soon as possible this week. Today is International Midwives Day, and I want to shout out to all the midwives who work in Aotearoa New Zealand as both lead maternity carers in the community and our core midwives in hospitals and our primary birthing units, Ngā Mihi Nui Kia Koutou. There are about 3,200 of these essential frontline workers, and they undertake important work across our communities. And during the period of lockdown, around 6,000 babies were delivered, many, if not all, with the help of those midwives. So once again, I want to acknowledge the wonderful work they do, not just today, but each day. Today is also World Hand Hygiene Day. Now, that's very apposite at this time, but I also should point out that every day at the moment should be World Hand Hygiene Day. And it's a very important reminder today of the importance of what is a very simple action that prevents on passing on any infection, but in particular at the moment, greatly reduces the risk of passing on the COVID-19 infection. And fittingly, this year, the campaign theme is Save Lives, Clean Your Hands. Prime Minister, I'm happy to leave it there and hand back to you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bloomfield. Can I reiterate your thanks to those who are our midwives in our communities, and it is in times like this that we acknowledge the role that they play for many mums-to-be within their community and within their whānau, and they always go above and beyond. I just want to acknowledge that. And also, of course, World Hand Washing Day as well. Achieving zero cases 2 days in a row is the result of New Zealanders demonstrating a level of commitment and discipline to our goal of winning the fight against COVID-19 that we can all be undeniably proud of. It points to our lockdown doing exactly what we'd planned it to do, break the chain of transmission. However, we know the virus can have a long tail and that other cases can pop up. So as we make our way through this week and head towards the level 3 review next week, my message remains, don't do anything that snatches our potential victory at this point. One case at one gathering has led to multiple clusters, and the virus getting away on us is can still happen. So my message remains the same for the remainder of the week. Stay home. Steady your bubble, maintain physical distancing, and let's double down this week to maintain this good run of numbers. I'm also mindful that I have seen positive numbers in other places before, and it's not always sustained, so we do need to still be cautious. Before I come to Australia, I want to give you a quick update on the progress of the support and assistance for businesses and their workers hit by COVID-19. This afternoon, the COVID-19 Response Further Management Measures Legislation Bill will have its first reading in Parliament. It gives effect to a range of measures the government has put in place to support businesses through the pandemic, including helping businesses facing insolvency to remain viable by hibernating existing debt until they can trade normally again. Changes to the parental leave scheme to allow essential workers to return to work without being disadvantaged by losing entitlements to certain leave and payments. And changes that will allow the likes of the Heart Foundation and Coast Guard and particularly the Countdown Kids Charitable Trust to process their fundraising lotteries through email, phone and electronic payments. These are just some of the innovative consequences of this extraordinary time we're in and the resolution that we're finding for those problems. First reading of the bill will take place this afternoon. It will be referred to the Epidemic Response Committee for consideration and reported back to the House on Tuesday, 12 May. It will then move through the remaining legislative stages as quickly as possible. I've just come from a meeting of the Australian National Cabinet, a gathering of Australia's state and federal leaders to discuss our experience with COVID-19 on both sides of the ditch, what we can learn from one another, and how we might be able to work together as we recover from this pandemic. The National Cabinet tends to meet in times of national crisis, but obviously is infrequent. The last New Zealand Prime Minister to participate in such a meeting was Peter Fraser, who attended various meetings of Australia's War Cabinet. Australians and New Zealanders travel across the ditch more than they do anywhere else. New Zealand is Australia's second largest source of tourists after China, with 1.2 million visitors last year, and 1.6 million Aussies visited us. So we both stand to benefit from getting travel up and running again. Part of the reason for so much travel is that families and friendships, of course, span the Tasman. There are around 75,000 Australians in New Zealand and more than 500,000 Kiwis in Australia. We're also Australia's largest export market by number of exporting firms. 18,500 Aussie businesses trade with New Zealand, meaning we're especially critical for Australian SMEs. So the case for increasing economic relations when safe is clear. I joined the meeting at the very, very beginning, and I should note it is still underway, and so you'll forgive me for not saying too much here at this point, but it is our intention to issue a statement at the conclusion of the National Cabinet in order to provide you all with an update of some of the issues discussed and some of the potential outcomes of that meeting. But again, I would note such a discussion has only been possible as a result of the world-leading results on both sides of the Tasman to get the virus under control. And I do think that we should both be proud of the efforts that have been made and also, the demonstration of the important ANZAC bond between us. On to a bit of Kiwi ingenuity, I've outlined a few innovations today that are helping to get our economy moving. I want to reflect on one of those in particular, and that is our vital supply chain, our transport sector. New ways of working have ensured our food and goods have been unpacked from ships and aircraft, loaded into trucks and delivered to retailers, as well as kept our exports flowing. At Wellington Centrepoint, the team's eliminated face-to-face contact and physical paperwork, and they've adopted digital kiosks, radio comms, automated weighbridges and virtual planning meetings. We've seen that same kind of adaptability in businesses up and down the country. Just one example is how two particular drivers, Greg and Sam, have willingly changed their hours of work and routines to match the different inter-islander ferry timetables so they can continue to get frozen vegetables and chips from Ashburton to the ferries in Picton. I want to say thanks to Greg and Sam. Necessity breeds innovation, and with social distancing and good hygiene likely, of course, to be with us for a long time to come, I wouldn't be surprised if we keep seeing innovation throughout our alert levels and across the country. Happy to take your questions.
How would you characterise enthusiasm for the Trans-Tasman bubble from the Australian side? And noting, of course, that Australia, New Zealand's had 2 days of zero cases in a row, but Australia's had a kick up in cases largely built around one factory in Victoria. So it's kind of like a cold shower potentially on how safe it might be.
Well, look, I think the important message there is that it doesn't take much, and that I think reinforces why we continue to share that message of stay the course. We have seen across the ditch very low numbers, and then it can only take one outbreak in one workplace one environment for you then suddenly to have an uptick, and that is why it is so important we stick with our restrictions. Look, the other takeaway for me, and I say this just generally, regardless, is actually there are a lot of similarities in the way that we have each tried to manage COVID and get on top of it and get back in control, and therefore there's the same goals for both of us. Neither of us want cases of COVID coming between our countries. Neither of us would want the burden of that. So I think regardless of our future path, we'll be looking for ways to do it safely. That will be top of mind. And then I'll come to you, Toby. Yeah, Jackson.
Prime Minister, was there any pushback from any of the state leaders? Did any of them feel that this push for a trans-Tasman travel bubble is too ambitious because many Australian states still have their state borders closed?
Yeah. And so, again, I do want to respect the fact that the National Cabinet is still meeting, and I do also want to respect the fact that we were meeting within a Cabinet environment. So that means, of course, you'll know that when I'm talking about Cabinet, I'll often speak in very general terms. But this is not to get ahead of a decision. There are obviously, within Australia, still restrictions around domestic travel, and those are ultimately issues for Australia. I think simply the position that I would take on behalf of New Zealand is that when we feel comfortable and confident that we both won't receive cases from Australia, but equally that we won't export them, then that will be the time to move.
Can you be clear on whether or not there would be a quarantine at either border?
The whole purpose of us discussing the possibility of having a bubble of sorts between us, a safe zone of travel, would be so that you wouldn't have to have a quarantine attached. I think everyone would acknowledge that it would be prohibitive. People just wouldn't travel if they had to stay on either side in quarantine for a two-week period and have to do the same again when you return. But there is still a lot of work to be done before we can progress an idea like that, but it's obviously being floated because of the benefits that it would bring.
Taking into account all of those things that we need to ensure that we weren't further transmitting the virus, what kind of certainty or clarity can you give to New Zealanders in Australia who want to come home and see their families? When will they be able to do that?
Of course, I'd say to New Zealanders in Australia, you can come home, but of course at the moment we are still requiring that quarantine to keep you safe and to keep your family safe. But we're are also actively considering what the future looks like for us. Now, I'm very keen, of course, as I've always said, that the advantage we have of getting back in control of the virus has been to try and get back to some form of normality. International travel won't feel like that for some time, but if we can find a way to make it work with Australia, then that would give that sense of normality, if we can make it work.
And the other level too.
Oh, again, really the alert level framework within New Zealand, of course, for us it's actually more the criteria of what we're seeing on both sides of the ditch with our cases, with our controls and with our border management.
Jessica? Do you see a situation where we would have a trans-Tasman bubble but exclude one of the Australian states, for example?
For me, that actually really comes down to a determination at a state and federal level by Australia. So that's less of... other than, of course, we would have some expectations of when travel resumes or if we're able to establish this kind of bubble, making sure we were doing it safely for us. And so that would mean if we were seeing a cluster of cases or growth in cases or outbreaks, that we would have to look on changing what we were doing and what we were receiving on our side. But ultimately, I still see that as part of the arrangements that need to be made between the states and at a federal level.
Are you able to give us any more clarity on time frame?
No, I do want to let that meeting conclude. And of course, at the moment, what we're discussing here is a concept that's been floated for some time, but I do want to allow the meeting to at least draw to a conclusion before we go any further.
Prime Minister, can you, what is your view on how the applications for compassionate exemptions have been handled, given every single one has been declined for that particular circumstance?
Yeah, look, I would anticipate that Dr. Bloomfield probably has a similar view to me on this matter. The whole point of having the ability to apply for a compassionate exemption was so that we could assess the circumstances. There should be nothing automated about that. We should give genuine consideration for each of those applications because they would only have been made because of dire circumstances. Now, I absolutely appreciate the reason we put that in place was we didn't want double grief. We didn't want a situation where people entered into a risky situation for them and their families, but equally, we wanted to give them a chance to ask to see if there was a way it could be managed.
Can you clarify the situation for people wanting to travel within New Zealand rather than coming from overseas and being in quarantine? And is that a lower threshold?
Sorry, what was that?
If people have a dying relative in another part of the country, would there be a lower threshold for allowance?
That's some of the kinds of scenarios that, of course, then you would want considered when looking at some applications as to the degree to which it can be conducted safely. You see the conditions for the person who made a case to the court were very, very specific about private residence, private travel. And so really the Ministry of Health are having to weigh up some quite complex situations and making sure they also weigh up keeping other New Zealanders safe as well.
That's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern, and that final question we heard there was in regards to the 24 people who have requested exemptions to being quarantined or put into managed isolation upon arrival in New Zealand. 24 people who have said on grounds of compassion that they wanted to see people back here in New Zealand. And so the Prime Minister was taking some questions on that. Earlier we heard from Director General of Health Ashley Bloomfield announcing zero new cases of COVID-19 for the second day in a row, something he describes as, quote, very encouraging. The Prime Minister also spoke briefly about her appearance at the Australian Cabinet, her virtual appearance at the Australian Cabinet meeting, the first New Zealand Prime Minister to do that since Peter Fraser attended a wartime Cabinet. And she talked about the case for a trans-Tasman bubble, although didn't give too much away about what was discussed.